After a few quiet months, summertime TV has gotten busy again. HBO's already started with new episodes of True Blood, and this past weekend presented the season premiere of Curb Your Enthusiasm. But there's a lot more on the immediate horizon, so much that our TV critic David Biancooley says this may be the biggest single week ever for fresh quality television.
I know it's hot and it's summer, but for me it's been like Christmas. I've been opening up delivery envelopes filled with preview DVDs of returning TV series, and it's been one gift after another. I've seen and enjoyed them all. And now, starting this week, you can too. It's a ridiculously rich feast of terrific television shows, but not on broadcast TV. On the broadcast networks, the only example of intelligent involving TV right now is NBC's Friday Night Lights, which presents its fabulous finale on Friday. But that same finale was shown months ago on satellite TV and has been available for a while as a DVD box set, so it's not exactly new, just prominently recycled. For the record, though, let me praise Friday Night Lights one last time. What a brilliantly acted, wonderfully understated show. The other great shows appearing this week are on cable, and, like Friday Night Lights, are likely to earn a spot on my end-of-year top 10 list. On Wednesday, FX begins the final season of Rescue Me, Dennis Leary's drama about New York firefighters. It's time to wrap up just before the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and it begins with as much audacity and unpredictability as always. Also on Wednesday, DirecTV, the same satellite service that sneak previewed Friday Night Lights, becomes the only network, not just the first, to show a new season of Damages. That's the drama starring Glenn Close as a ferocious lawyer. And on Sunday, AMC presents the fourth season premiere of Breaking Bad, starring Bryan Cranston as a high school chemistry professor turned meth manufacturer. With the same network's Mad Men not delivering any new shows until 2012, Breaking Bad pretty much holds undisputed title rights as the best TV show of the year, period. I've seen 3 new episodes of Breaking Bad, 2 of Damages, and 9 of Rescue Me, and they've all been fantastic. Rescue Me features supporting work by Callie Thorne that is so amazing she displays a lot more talent and range in her few scenes here than she does as the star of her own cable drama, the recently launched Necessary Roughness. Damages features a steal-the-screen recurring role too, with John Goodman playing the head of a Blackwater-type military operation. It's a very different kind of role than he played as a professor in the first season of Tremé, but it's another vital, vibrant contribution to another outstanding TV drama. And what can I say about Breaking Bad? Without giving away key plot points, almost nothing. But this show simply has to be seen. From the start, it's been charting the trajectory of Walter White, played by Bryan Cranston, from desperate anti-hero to defiant villain. He got into the meth business only after getting a diagnosis of terminal cancer and wanting to leave a nest egg for his family. But even after his cancer went into remission, Walter kept cooking. At the end of last season, Walter was held captive in his own meth lab, about to be killed on orders from his equally mild-mannered drug lord, Gus. Walter countered with the only move he had, dispatching his partner and former student, Jesse, brilliantly played by Aaron Paul, to murder the chemist designated as Walter's replacement. That's how last season ended. I won't reveal what happens, but I will say that Gus, played by Giancarlo Esposito, eventually visits the underground meth lab to confront Walter, who's still held captive. As Walter pleads his case, explaining why he shouldn't be replaced by one of Gus's flunkies, Gus doesn't say a word. Instead, in a scene that's increasingly intense, he changes slowly and silently into plastic coveralls, while reaching for and unleashing the blade of a box cutter.
Oh, is that what you want?
This short order cook? You're not flipping hamburgers here, pal. What happens when you get a bad barrel of precursor?
How would you even know it?
And what happens in summer when the humidity rises and your product goes cloudy? How would you guard against that, huh? Gus, you do this, all you'll have left is an $8 million hole in the ground. This lab, this equipment is useless without us, without Jesse and myself. You have no new product. You have no income. Your people up there will not be paid. Your distribution chain collapses. Without us, you have nothing. You kill me, you have nothing. You kill Jesse, you don't have me.
There's so much to love about Breaking Bad. It's got a pace unlike any other show on television, and a visual sensibility rivaled only by Mad Men. And with a great cast headed by Cranston and Paul, it boasts one of TV's strongest acting companies. By the way, this bounty of summer riches, like a sudden display of fresh fruit at the farmer's market, is even more plentiful. I haven't even mentioned TNT's The Closer, the Kira Sedgwick series that launches its final season this week, or the Sci-Fi Network's very amiable, fairly clever roster of new and returning Monday shows. All of these summer series, including True Blood and Curb Your Enthusiasm, are better than most of the new fall shows the broadcast networks are about to offer. So enjoy them while you can. The harvest is in.
David Bianculli is founder and editor of TVWorthWatching.com and teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies.
Oprah Winfrey has admitted she could do a better job with her new cable network called OWN. It's had disappointing ratings since it started in January. Now that her daily talk show is over, Winfrey says she's going to focus her attention on making OWN successful. Television critic Eric Deggans wanted to figure out why OWN is struggling, so he spent a day watching the Oprah Winfrey Network.
This may be the most harrowing assignment I have ever tackled for NPR.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for welcoming me and OWN into your home.
Now, I consider myself a confident guy, but it's a little scary entering a world where my concerns are among the least considered in the universe.
We're talking offensive Speedos. We've all seen that guy on the beach.
At 8 a.m., I turned on OWN, expecting to plunge into living my best life. Instead, I got an old Dr. Phil episode.
Tell your story. How do you feel about being here today?
Then a rerun of What Not to Wear.
The mom jean, which is, if you don't know, a high-rise, light-wash, tapered leg jean that makes your butt look like a football field.
Turns out the queen of all media's channel doesn't really get started with new content until 10 a.m. Strike one in this game. But when 10 rolls around...
Here she is, Gail King.
G-A-Y-L-E. Best friend Gail King's live talk show is introduced by the queen herself, maybe because she's always been the next best thing to Oprah anyway. Her show is simulcast on Sirius XM satellite radio, but in trying to straddle two mediums, King masters neither. Too laid back for morning television and too visual for radio. And King's gushing interview with celebrity chef Rocco Despirito made this male intruder feel even more uncomfortable.
How many things do men do that are maternal and generous,
yeah,
and are meant to take care of other people? Very few things, right? You know,
yeah,
we kind of work, but when you cook for someone, you're being sensitive.
That's what it
you're
is.
Doing what moms do.
It,
and that's,
yes,
that's really attractive.
No, Rocco, guys cook because they want to eat. Here's where I realized some of the channel's most compelling daytime programming was commercials for their big showcase series.
Dear Diary, what on earth have I done with my life?
Finding Sarah features former Duchess of York Sarah Ferguson striving to recover from divorce and worldwide personal scandal.
We appear to be not broken, but we're broken. And I am broken.
Okay, to a guy, it sounds like a bad Dateline NBC episode. But I got a certain catty thrill watching a woman who was the Kate Middleton of her day suffer through scream therapy with a Native American shaman and counseling sessions with Dr. Phil.
I've got to do this, otherwise I will die.
My own favorite OWN show is season 25, Oprah Behind the Scenes. This is where cameras go backstage during Winfrey's final season on broadcast TV, exposing the host's boundless ego and relentless perfectionism. Here's a conversation, okay, a teeny bit of an argument, between Winfrey and King on what to wear in their final appearance together.
Gail, it's the Oprah Winfrey Show. I can wear whatever
I
want.
I think it's better that either we both should have worn jeans. I think we should be, I'm serious, that we should look kind of similar.
After my day soaking up the OWN spirit, this much is clear. The channel needs more Oprah and more distinctive programming. But even handicapped by my Y chromosome, I see how OWN can work by sticking to Winfrey's celebrity-gilded self-empowerment brand. Wonder when that channel will start.
Eric Deggans is the TV and media critic for the St. Petersburg Times. And we have an update this morning. The Oprah Winfrey Network just announced that Oprah will take full creative and operational control this fall after lower-than-expected ratings and a management shakeup. Her title will be CEO.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Next week, NBC is starting a new show called It's Worth What? The it in that title is antiques, or junk, depending on your point of view. There's now more than a dozen programs on that topic. Why so many? Commentator Andrew Wallenstein tells us why TV viewers are so interested in other people's stuff and how much that stuff is worth.
Think of It's Worth What? As the Price is Right crossed with Antiques Roadshow.
Now, I got a couple of cool things to show you. All you have to do is tell me what's worth more.
On this game show, host Cedric the Entertainer has contestants guess the value of objects found anywhere from your neighbor's attic to international museums.
We are going with the gloves.
Are you sure?
We are sure.
It's Worth What represents a cable craze crossing over to broadcast, and the trend isn't over yet. Another show, Buried Treasure, is coming to Fox in August. They join American Pickers, Auction Hunters, Auctioneers, Auction Kings, Auction Pact, Cash and Carry, and What the Sell? My God, someone call the pun police. Now, antiques are not a new attraction on TV. PBS first introduced The Roadshow back in 1979. But that's not the show causing this craze.
On this episode of Pawn Stars.
This is 1946 jukebox.
To some degree, blame it on Pawn Stars, which became a huge hit for History Channel a few years ago.
I see government war bonds all the time, but I've never had one from the Revolutionary War.
And just like a vintage Rolex, it's inspired knockoffs.
In the heart of Detroit's 8 Mile lies the city's biggest and baddest pawn shop.
Why else do you think the channel True TV would come up with a show named
Hardcore Pawn?
Yep. The worst pun yet, Hardcore Pawn. Copycat shows keep coming until the ratings say otherwise. But the weird thing is, very few entries in this antique category fail. The inexhaustible supply here must be striking a deep chord among viewers. And here's why. I don't think it's a coincidence that this genre has grown over the same time period that this country struggles through recession. Maybe it shouldn't come as a surprise that what really resonates during tough times are images of average Americans dusting off items in the forgotten corners of their homes and discovering they've got hidden value. But there's a cruel irony at play here. The types of businesses depicted in these programs traffic in people's financial problems, not prosperity. Take pawn shops, for instance, which on TV may look like a fun place to trade in undiscovered treasure. But have you been in one of these stores lately? During a recession, they're filled with debtors selling more mundane objects. And as for shows like Storage Wars and Storage Hunters, many of those lockers become open for raiding only when some poor soul has been forced to default on his or her personal belongings. These shows project a fantasy on the back of a nightmare, the kind of hardships that are too depressing for reality TV. But transforming trash into cash, now that's an alchemy well-suited to this economy.
Commentator Andrew Wallenstein is an editor at Variety.
Sherwood Schwartz, who created the TV sitcoms Gilligan's Island and The Brady Bunch, died yesterday in Los Angeles. He was 94. In addition to creating the series, Schwartz wrote their memorable theme songs. Schwartz was waiting for acceptance to medical school in 1938 when he asked his brother, who was writing for Bob Hope's radio show, if he could try his hand at a few jokes. He forgot about medical school and was soon writing for Hope, then for the Ozzie and Harriet radio show. He shared an Emmy Award with his brother and others when he was the head writer for the Red Skelton TV show. The Brady Bunch and Gilligan's Island were mocked by critics, but they were both big hits that had long lives in syndicated reruns. Schwartz once said he envisioned Gilligan's Island as a social statement, with the message that it's one world and we all have to live with each other. Here's how one episode opened. Gilligan and the skipper are lounging on the island and listening to the radio.
Hey, skipper, do you want to hear the news?
The ill-fated minnow made the headlines again today.
The minnow? The minnow? The minnow?
Yeah.
He said the minnow.
What? What is it?
He said the minnow.
The minnow?
Yes, the minnow, a small charter vessel which carried five passengers and a crew of two. Today, a maritime board of inquiry sought to fix the blame for the loss of the vessel and passengers.
Worst storm in history, that's what it was.
At the conclusion of the hearing, the maritime board decided that the captain of the ship was solely responsible for the disaster.
The captain? Me? Gilligan, they're blaming me!
It was a clear case of dereliction of duty. Fortunately, there are a few captains of charter vessels who are as completely incompetent as...
Oh!
Where are you going?
I can't face anyone. I mean...
No, Skipper.
It's my fault!
Terry spoke to Sherwood Schwartz in 1988.
Now, the network was concerned that if you didn't explain within the story the premise of Gilligan's Island each week, that the audience would be lost and they wouldn't understand why there were seven castaways that couldn't get off this island. You suggested that you could take care of that by writing a theme song that would open the show each week that would explain the whole story. That was a very clever idea, I think.
Well, it was a way to do exactly what they feared, which is dead, dull exposition. You could satisfy that particular requirement of why are they there and why they can't get off and so forth with a bouncy theme song.
You suddenly found yourself having to overnight deliver to them a theme song. So before you came up with the song that we actually hear now on Gilligan's Island, you wrote another song, and I was wondering if I could get you to sing the lyrics for the first song that you wrote.
It was a calypso song. Tourists come, tourists go, tourists rocking to and fro. It was like that. It was Harry Belafonte time, certainly not Sherwood Schwartz time.
So instead you ended up with a parody of a sea shanty.
Exactly, exactly.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic port aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailing man, the skipper brave and sure. Five passengers set sail that day for a three-hour tour, a three-hour tour. The weather started getting rough, the tiny ship was tossed. If not for the courage of the fearless crew, the minnow would be lost. The minnow would be lost. The ship's aground on the shore of this uncharted desert isle, with Gilligan, the skipper too. The millionaire and his wife, the movie star, the professor and Mary Ann, here on Gilligan's Island.
Gilligan's Island was taken off the air pretty suddenly, and I guess you didn't even have time to do a rescue episode. That means you were able to, a few years later, do a special two-hour rescue. But in hindsight, would you have preferred doing a half-hour series ending?
The real point is that it was better the way it turned out, because when I did the two-hour show called Rescue from Gilligan's Island, the fact that I didn't do a final episode allowed me to make a comeback with that show, which led to two more two-hour shows, and I'm currently negotiating for a show called Gilligan's Island, the Second Generation, which is about the sons and daughters of the original castaways.
And how do they end up being castaways themselves? Or are they maybe, am I being presumptuous? Are they not castaways?
No, you're being correct. Thurston Howell IV takes Ginger's daughter and Gilligan's son and the skipper's son, and they all set out to find the island where their parents had spent so many years.
And
they themselves. And as you laughed, and rightly so, a storm comes up and they find themselves on this island. But they're rescued by their own parents.
You also wrote episodes for Ozzie and Harriet. So maybe you can answer the question about Ozzie that everyone in America always wanted to know. What did he do for a living?
He made a lot of money, which is a good thing to do for a living. Now, I wrote that show in radio.
Oh,
I didn't write it in television.
So you're off the hook.
Yes. He didn't have a job in radio either.
maybe I'm being presumptuous here, but you strike me as someone who grew up in an urban area, Jewish, and here you are creating the prototype for what became the ultimate suburban, goyish sitcom.
So I'm told. Yes, it's you're talking about the white bread Brady Bunch?
Well, that too, yeah. I was even thinking of Ozzie and Harriet.
Look, I have trouble. My rabbi insisted that it would have been a better name, Goldstein's Island. What's wrong with that? Or the Bernstein Bunch, for that matter.
And why didn't you write the Bernstein Bunch?
Above all, I feel I am commercial in the sense that I like my work to appeal to many people. And that's my satisfaction. So to aim at the biggest, broadest base of audience, you're better off doing the Brady Bunch than the Bernstein Bunch.
Well, let me thank you for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Terry spoke with Sherwood Schwartz in 1988. He died Tuesday in Los Angeles. He was 94. Here's the first version he wrote of the Gilligan's Island theme.
Two secretaries from USA sail on a Minnow this lovely day. A high school teacher is next aboard, all taking trip that they cannot afford. The next two people are millionaires. They got no worries.
Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne Marie Baldonado, Joan Tui Westman, Sam Brigger, John Myers, John Sheehan, Lauren Krenzel, and Heidi Simon. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies.
Relaxing on deck on this little ship, the weather is clear and the sun is hot. The weather is clear? I think it is not. Tourists come, tourists go.